Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. We've changed things up a little bit tonight. Tuna is out on assignment, so I wanted to mention one of our big fans and an original listener to the show, UK Bill. I know his mom's favorite is the tuna. And so I want to let her know right off the bat, he's not here this week. He'll be back next week. You have nothing to worry about. We hope that you enjoy the episode tonight, even without your favorite. And I know that the guy that has slid into his chair is going to do a great job, because he is Mr. Electricity at the high top table. He is Whiteboard Jody. And bellied up to the bar is a man who I think now is in line to be the new groundskeeper at Great American Ballpark. The fabulous one, Freddie Bender.
I've been tunas with Kels down there at Yum Center running relays.
Guys, great to have you guys here tonight. How are you all doing?
Doing good. We got a coach.
We have a coach. Yes, we have a coach.
And I actually wanted to talk about that just briefly off the top. I wish Tuna was here, because I've got to tell you, and anybody that is a regular listener to our show would know that Tuna has called these two coaching searches.
Does he have a crystal ball or something?
Put him on the insiders list.
It's all those rocks or whatever that he gave.
Yeah,
he gave you one.
Yeah, moon rocks.
He has the magic rocks. He has the waxing gibbous moon.
The tuna helper.
But somehow he knew who U of L's coach was going to be, and he called that Mark Pope was coming to UK.
Yeah, like week before it happened, right?
And
he wasn't kidding.
He certainly called the Mark Pope thing. Now, the U of L situation, that was who he hoped they would
get.
Right, the UK situation, he called it on the podcast last week.
He did.
And I will say, he sent out a text over the weekend. And he goes, I'm being serious. He goes, I like the hire for UK.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I love the hire for UK, and we're going to get into that here in just a little bit. But I did want to give Tuna his props for having called both of those when I don't think anybody else in this town, I mean nobody, called those two guys and said, this is who it's going to be, especially from the Kentucky standpoint. He was adamant that's who Kentucky was going to get. we hope to see Tuna back here next week. I'm sure he will be.
See, Tuna, we give you props. We don't talk bad about you when you're not here.
He might not get this seat back, though, because the view over here is much better.
Reminder, we are on social media, on Twitter, at Blockout Pod, or X, as it is now known. Type in Blockout Sports Pod into your Facebook search engine. You can find new episodes linked on both of those sites. Correspond with the program as you see fit. But as we got into towards the end of the episode last weekend, this past weekend was the Masters. And I know Fred and I, for anybody that cares about golf and that loves professional golf, the Masters holds a certain spot, I think, in your...
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's one of my favorite weekends of the year. And I want to get into a couple of things about that later. But we all made our picks last week, and to me, the easiest pick in the world, and it was Scottie Scheffler was going to win the tournament.
I think he's going to win a Super Bowl.
I think Scott Scheffler is going to win anything he enters right now.
NBA championship, World Series.
Yeah, hey, Rory, thanks for telling him that he needed to put his blade putter in the bag and use a mallet putter, and that only helped him out just a little bit more.
Well, and I also read that, I mean, that was a part of it, but Scheffler also hired a putting coach,
yeah,
that has kind of changed his stroke and kind of made it, because what I heard a lot of people talking about was that they never thought Scheffler was necessarily a bad putter, like kind of became the narrative. It was that his stroke had changed kind of from, and maybe he was overthinking things to a certain extent. It sounds like this new coach kind of broke him down back to the basics and was like, dude, you're the best player in the world. Just don't cost yourself with the putter, and you're going to win a lot of tournaments.
It's that old saying, keep it simple, stupid.
Right. And I think that's what he did. And, you know, Sunday, while it lacked some of the drama, perhaps, of Masters past, because the thing was pretty well over after, like, the 13th, after the leaders were through 13, 14, it was very impressive to see Scheffler do what he did. Even when he made a mistake, all week long, he would bounce back with two or three birdies after he made a bogey, or, you know, he even made a double on Saturday.
If you go out to cut the grass and come in three holes later, you can't tell if he's three under the last three holes or three over the last three holes. And that is very important, probably more so in golf than any other sport out there.
Yeah, especially when you get in these pressure-packed major tournament situations where he just has that kind of calming, whatever it is, like you said. I mean, we say he has ice waters in his vein. We were talking about him being a golfing robot. He kind of plays non-emotionally. But it's not that he doesn't care if he wins or not. If you listen to his press conference after the tournament, he said he was talking to his buddies before the round on Sunday, and he was like, man, this would be a lot easier if I didn't care so damn much about winning. You know, he's yeah. like, he was like, I wish I could just go out there and say, I hope I play well. I hope, you know, everything. He said, but I care so much about winning. And I mean, that's a big part of it too. And for him to be able to balance that, at least outwardly, where you can't tell, and his caddy does a tremendous job of kind of keeping him on that level plane. I just think it's incredibly impressive what he's been able to do. And I look forward to the next major here at Valhalla, and I don't see any reason why he won't be the favorite, the overwhelming favorite there as well.
For sure.
It's kind of crazy how he keeps his head down. Have you noticed
well,
that?
Don't look
he
at
even
his
talked
feet.
About it. But
yeah.
But he keeps his head down and doesn't look up, like, almost through the whole court. It's very strange, but he does.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
He wants to stay just no, I'm talking about when he's just walking.
Oh.
Dude, I'm talking like he looks down at the ground while he's walking. Every once in a while, he'll look up at the patrons or whatever. But for the most part, he is locked in and doesn't want anything to change that.
He actually said in the in the post-round yeah. press conference on Sunday that he actually looked up a little bit more than he usually
right.
does.
Right, I
when,
heard him. Yeah.
When he got that big lead
yeah.
late,
oh, yeah.
he said, I wanted to take it in, and I noticed the
yeah.
fans more than I usually do.
Right.
He said, I looked up at the trees and looked at the flowers.
Right.
Because I wanted, but at that point, he was up, you know, four strokes, five strokes
yeah.
with just a few holes
You're
to go.
You're like me. You watch live at the Masters to the end.
Oh, of course. of course I did.
While we're on it, shout out to Ted Scott, by the way.
Yes.
That was
oh.
his fourth Masters
yeah.
win
right.
as a caddy.
And
he won more money on Sunday than the third place finisher won.
Wow.
And he's won almost $2 million this year as a caddy.
I love that.
That's a pretty good gig if you can get it.
And we have a star in the making, too. Ludwig.
Ludwig.
That guy Oberg. Is going to win a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love his personality. He's very likable.
And he,
he might be the fastest player I've seen on tour, too.
Yeah, he plays quick, and he, even when he made his kind of fatal mistake by putting it in the water on 11, I mean, he bounced back and at least, you know, showed that he wasn't going to completely fold and go away.
Right.
And
was that after someone knocked the power bar out of his hand?
Yeah. Yeah. And Scheffler said that he felt like if he didn't stay aggressive and play the way that he plays, that he thought Oberg could catch him because he said he's not going to go away. So he said he and Ted talked about on 13, I guess, like, should I go for the green in two or should I lay up? And they were like, well, I mean, you play the way you play, you go for it.
Yeah.
Of course he did. He had a tap in birdie, you know.
I'm not sure. Is he a dual citizen? Because he has spent most of his life in the U.S.
Right, and he went to Texas Tech. And
I mean, because you hear it, he's from Sweden, for those of you that don't know.
Right.
When he talks, think he's from Kansas.
Oh, totally,
or
totally.
Something.
Yeah.
He has no accent whatsoever.
No accent whatsoever, yeah.
I don't know. That's something for our producer to look up.
He's
taking on another role.
Yeah, I know.
But I do like his personality where he smiles. He says funny things. I like where he goes, I look at the scoreboard all the time. I feel like that's how I got to know what I need to do.
Well, and
he's just a refreshing kind of. He's a little.
These young guys like that don't really know any better, and they don't have the nerves of an older player.
And his bloodline, I think both his parents were college athletes or professional athletes.
I believe that. I believe that's right.
Well, it'll be interesting to have him here playing and then him on the Ryder Cup team going against us.
If he's a dual citizen, he might be playing for the U.S.
Well,
right?
No,
he already played for them.
Well, I know he played for them before last time.
He would not jump ship.
Come on,
he's a
come to this side.
He's a Euro guy from that standpoint all the way. We got to talk about Rory briefly, just because every year, I mean, if you listen to this podcast, you know that I pick him in almost every major to be up there. I'm starting to have my doubts that he'll ever win a Masters. And I think a lot of it boils down to, let me ask you guys something. Who are the two most successful players in the history of the Masters tournament? Who are the two most successful
Jack
players?
Jack and Tiger.
Exactly.
6 and 5.
Now, those two guys, specifically at Augusta, are probably the two most conservative around the golf course players that have ever played at that level. They played so conservative, and they know when you hit the ball to the middle of the green and don't go flag hunting. They know when to hit a 3-wood off the tee, mm-hmm. or hit an iron off the tee. And Rory, for whatever reason, he just doesn't have that. And he plays overly aggressive too often and makes too many big numbers. And I love Rory, and I wish he would win one. I really do. But every year it happens, he's another year older, right?
Yeah.
The pressure becomes heavier and heavier on him, just like Phil with the U.S. Open. And
it's even more than that, maybe, because it's the Masters.
And a lot has to be said that Rory really took a lot on his shoulders as kind of the face of the PGA Tour against LIV, whether he meant to be in that position or not. That's what happened. And I think a lot of that pressure just wears on him. And
wear on anybody.
Yeah.
Of course.
I think Rom did too before he left. I thought Rom helped him a little bit. And of course, Tiger wasn't there all the time to take the some of the heat off. But no, he may have gotten a little drained out.
Well, the position he is in is because of other players.
Right.
I mean, I've heard a lot of negative about Rory. He didn't walk up and say, hey, guys, I'm going to do that. All the other players around him, his compadres, his guys that he's playing with week in and week out, a lot of those are friends. They wanted him. They were like, you're the guy. And it, like Travis said, it's taxing. It wears on you day in and day out.
And I think he's emotionally strong enough and mature enough to shoulder a lot of that. But when you have to try to beat the 70 best golfers in the world on a course as difficult as Augusta and have the added pressure of having never won there, and all you need to do is win that tournament to complete the career Grand Slam, I just think it might be too much.
It's been 10 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when I heard that this weekend, I was like, has it been that? It's 10 years he's been trying to complete the career Grand Slam.
Yeah, and he hasn't won a major since the last PGA here at Valhalla, right?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we have that coming up in, what, about a month?
About four or five weeks.
And I can't wait for that. I know I'm planning on being out there a couple of different days. And that gets me into the last individual golfer that I wanted to talk about tonight. And that's Tiger Woods. I think most golf fans, I know I was really pulling for him to make the cut, which he did, which was very impressive. But he also ended up finishing dead last of any golfer that made the cut. He finished 60th in the tournament. Which leads me to this question. He has said time and time again, I'm not at the point in my career where I want to be a ceremonial golfer like Jack was or like Arnold was the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years that they played in the tournament. But Jody, you sent me a text, believe it was towards the end of the second round when he was actually playing pretty well.
He played phenomenal that round, if you think about it, what happened that round.
And you said he looks beat to me.
He did.
And I hate it that we're at a point in his career, for those of us that are our age or older, that were there for when he was the dominant player in the world, to see him kind of limping around the course. And, I mean, he has a hard time.
He looks so thick, too. He looks big.
He has a hard time just walking 72 holes. He has a hard time in his leg is like, and his back are like fused together with titanium and screws.
Well, I'll say this. The first two rounds, and I know he did look beat. If you looked in his face, he had tired eyes is what I call them. But he played well. He played as good as anybody did in that second round. There was so much wind. I think he played 20-something holes that day.
25, I think.
25 holes. And to do what he did, I thought was very impressive. Now, Saturday, he was awful. He didn't hit the ball good. And I look at that, and every golfer has that. Ask Rory. Ask Spieth. You know, there's guys that don't perform on Sunday.
Well, and he was dealing with back spasms, too, which
Sunday he turned around. If you watched, he played pretty good again, which I was surprised. I'm like, if that's what Saturday was like, Sunday's going to be awful.
He didn't score very well.
He didn't score very well, but he hit the ball pretty good.
He did hit the ball okay.
I think that's one of the toughest courses to walk.
It is.
I will say this.
It is.
My percentages have gone down. Do I think he could win another major? I do. I don't think more than one, but who knows? Let's see what happens at Valhalla. He loves that place.
It would be one of those things where, yes, it would have to be an easier course to walk. Everything would have... We know that he has the golfing talent to put together four rounds in a row. The question is, will his body hold up for 72 holes?
I think it's that ankle more than that lower. That back looked pretty good, and he had the back spasms. And Fred's right. He's thick.
He said,
I've been in the gym working harder
than
ever. He
looks like a linebacker. He's carrying a heavy frame around now, you know? He used to be kind of skinny and... I mean, I know he's been big, but he looks bigger than he used to look, even when he was
I think big. If you look at him from, like, you know, whatever, 96 to 2003 or 4, he was still kind of the skinny-ish type of kid. He had that crazy long swing with all that torque on his back. And then the middle part of his career, he started bulking up. His swing wasn't quite as long. But he made up for that with his strength. And then the injury started happening, whatever happened with the divorce and all that. But now he looks like a weightlifter.
Yeah, he's thick.
He looks like a weightlifter.
I wouldn't want to piss him off.
But he still has a beautiful golf swing, and he has adapted his swing fairly well. And, you know, he's had to, so that his body doesn't completely shut down on him. But how many years do you think he has legitimately to be a contender? He's 48. He's 48 years old.
Two more years. Yeah. I think he's going to give it a run for 2 years, see what he can do. His son's getting older. He wants to follow that. If people out there that don't know his son, this guy's going to play professional golf. This kid is great.
There's no doubt.
And he's got a great at it. He's a mini tiger. His mannerisms.
Well, he does the same things.
He talks trash
the same way. So he pumps his fist the same way.
At a press conference last week, Tiger said, "Of all the injuries I've had, it's never been my arms and my hands. I still have that." And he does, except for Saturday when he played so bad. I saw him two different chip shots inside 80 yards, left it short of the green. You don't see that.
Well, do you remember when he made his first comeback after the divorce and stuff, his first comeback, when he missed a bunch of cuts in a row? Remember, people were talking about he had the literal chipping yips. Mm. He had like Steve Sachs disease. He would be around the green and he would chip it over. He would chip it over. He would flub one. And I remember the announcers going, "This is uncomfortable to watch."
Golf club to the Escalade to do that to you.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right. I mean, that's something that older golfers that are at that level, they don't lose their touch like that around the green.
I see passion and maturity in his eyes now, which... You know, Tiger was very hardcore early in his years, 20, 25, 30 years old. He's getting older. He's more mature. He understands a lot more. I think he's got a chance for one more. Will he win one? But I think he's going to be top three.
I also think that he understands his place in the game now. And I don't think that was ever more evident than on Sunday when he was playing with that amateur. And they were yucking it up when they were walking up the fairways, and I think Tiger was giving him some advice, and the announcers on TV were like, 15 years ago Tiger Woods wouldn't have glanced at that kid.
And that kid played well.
He beat him.
Yeah, he played well on Sunday.
Yeah.
And if you look at him, if you all didn't watch, if you look at him, I was like, this kid doesn't even know how to walk.
Yeah.
He's this big, awkward, lumpy guy.
Yeah, big old dude. Big old guy.
But he was good, and that was fun to watch. So another Masters in the books, very successful. It was fun to watch. Congratulations to Scottie Scheffler. He deserves all the accolades that he's been getting, and I can't wait to see what he can do at Valhalla. I can't wait to actually go out and watch him in person.
You know what's funny about Scott? You look at him and this guy's 45. He's 27.
I know.
Scotty Scheffler, 27 or 28.
27. He looks like he's 40.
By the way, he's getting ready to have his first kid. I don't think it's here yet, but any day now.
Yeah, so any day now.
So, with all that being said, we mentioned it early in the show. And I know I've had some people reach out to me, texting me, what do Fred and Jody think about Kentucky's new basketball coach? I have my own thoughts about that, and I'll get to them after the fact. But I want to open the floor to you guys. And number one, I want to ask you guys,
how did you hear it? What happened? Where were you?
And and what the range of your feelings, how they might have changed since the time that you heard the news.
They changed in 30 minutes.
Well, that's what I want to hear. Fred, go ahead.
Well, what happened that was funny was, and I'm not going to steal all Jody's thunder here, but it was funny that when we were all listening to it, and I was around a bunch of people, UK fans, whatever, and we're all like, oh, who's it going to be? We've been talking about it all night. Everybody had their list. It went through Scott Drew, went to Donovan, it went down to different people turning us down, which all should have happened.
Did it go to Donovan?
I don't think it did.
Never reached him.
I don't think that Donovan.
I don't think they ever even asked
him. I don't think that Donovan could have gotten back with us in a timely manner anyways. And now that
the Bulls are playing tonight.
Yeah, and now that I know who's hired, I'm glad it wasn't Donovan. Looking back on it, I know that sounds funny, but just listening to some of the UK fans that are a bit, what's the word I'm looking for?
Insane?
Yes, or further than that, just out of, like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe that they hired Mark Bosa. I'm like, who do you think it is? I know who it is. It's on social media right now, Matt Jones. They're like, woo-hoo, and none of them can answer it. And I'm like, Mark Pope, what? Da-da-da. And just all of the ragging, and I can't believe it, and da-da-da. And then Matt Jones is like, I never would have chose him. I can't believe they picked him, da-da-da. And then he's like, what? You know, just all of the social media stuff, I'm all over it. And then within 30 minutes, it was like, we got to get behind this guy. And I'm like, typical of every fan base, once they're chosen, you have no choice.
Of course.
The same thing happened to all the U of L fans. They didn't, half of them had no idea who Pat Kelsey was. When he came in, they're like, man, I don't know. It's better than Kenny Payne, da da da. And then he comes in all energetic and everything, and they're like, I love this guy. I love everything about this guy. And you know what? I do too. And the same thing is set up for this. Cal left. We didn't kick him out. He left, people. Cal left. We did not tell him to leave. We may have had some tactics in NIL money and donations that we squirted him out. But Cal left, and that's the bottom line. We had to find a coach. In my opinion, Scott Drew's wife axed that deal. He didn't have the balls to come to Lexington.
The whole family except for him were in Lexington.
And he stayed there, and it was kind of like, you tell me what you think, da-da-da. If it was one of them games, I don't want you, Reverend. The guy we got now just whooped you a couple times anyways. Like, Scott Drew's weird. I don't need all that. His wife didn't like Kentucky. She axed the deal. I get it. But he went about it a very silly way. Like, if you really want to coach at Kentucky, you go with your whole family and you try to sell them on it. You don't let them go just figure it out themselves and you sit over there and eat nachos at some Mexican restaurant, you moron. So, Scott Drew, I hope you fail in everything that you do. But we're not mad that we didn't get you.
Now, let's be honest that is, or let's be straight that is the opinion of Freddie Benders and not,
right.
and not the official opinion of the Blockout Sports Pod.
That's right.
He wasn't high on my list. I
so,
told you all
no,
that.
No, no, I'm with you. So, anyways, at the end of the day, and I'll send this over to Jody, is Mark Pope, I'm pumped up that Mark Pope is here. He's a Kentucky guy. I think Mitch went out on a tightrope there and was like, you know, I do think that it was down at the bottom of his list, but it did make that it had a lot of reasons after he was hired that makes sense.
But see, I don't think he was down on. I mean, he wasn't
maybe not far
one,
down,
but I don't think he was as far down as a lot of people think.
Right? No, I'm with you. I don't think he was either, but I do think that he had a plan. I think he's talked to Mark Pope. I think they've had conversations. He's played us. He's been in Lexington before. But at the end of the day, UK got what they wanted. A UK guy that knows what's on the front of the jersey. And you know what I'm saying?
Can I ask you this before I go into what I think?
Yeah.
Do you think there was a conversation between Barnhart and Patino?
That was going to be my next question to
so
you guys.
I'll leave that alone, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Here's what I got to say. I told you last week, Jay Wright, Hurley, Bruce Pearl. Never went after Pearl.
And he told –
Jay Wright's in a great spot.
He told us why.
I wouldn't have left. Danny Hurley, he can three-peat. He's in a great spot. I get it. We didn't go after Pearl. I wanted a big, strong guy, thick skin that can handle the job. And Tuna talked about Pope. I was at U of K when Mark Pope was there. Mark,
yeah.
Our buddy Tommy that listens to the show, I took him to Tally Ho. He had never been there. Now, that's moved in Lexington since I was in school there. Mark Pope, 3 or 4 nights a week, was in Tally Ho at 1, 2 in the morning in a corner studying. I would go in to get a burger, and he was studying. And one night, we actually sat down and had a conversation. We had a mutual friend. And he was studying Calc 2. If you've ever taken that class, undergrad class, it's one of the hardest classes there is in college. And I was like, I've got to take that next semester. He goes, it's not that bad. He was a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But looking back, listening to the press conference, seeing what happened, you know, I'm not mad at Cal for leaving. I think he did us a favor. He did the right thing. It worked out for everybody. I'm not throwing stones at Cal at all.
No, I'm not either. I mean.
But you keep your 4,000 fans, Arkansas, because we had 21,000 people there on Sunday.
Right. I mean, they know that there's.
And when the bus came in and all the players got out, Wayne Turner was there from Atherton.
Wayne Turner was there.
When all the players got off, and then Pope walked off with the trophy like he did when we won the championship.
Right,
I was
right.
like, that's such a great setup.
It was very good setup. I was a little, not being devil's advocate, but I did want him to be able to answer some tough questions, which I still haven't heard him answer. I know Matt Jones asked about home and home away and his philosophy on that. It was the first question that Matt Jones got during his standing ovation. And he answered it as like a pep rally.
But
I get it. But I just want, like, Pat Kelsey had to answer tough questions in a press conference.
Yeah, but this was different.
I know it was.
This was a literal pep rally.
It was. And
it wasn't the time.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't like. I mean, I don't know why he had to have a pep rally. Why did he have to have a pep rally?
I'll tell you now why he needed to have a pep rally.
Why?
Because half the fan base wasn't sold on it.
They didn't know.
And they needed him. They needed that. I think it was a brilliant move.
Well, yeah, if he does good, they needed it. If he doesn't.
No. They needed it to galvanize the fan base 100% behind
him. I get
him.
It, but
that's
the man,
why.
But the man's a Rhodes Scholar. He can answer a question halfway seriously during a pep rally. At least answer the question.
But, Fred, they're
not go, hey, have y'all heard about Rick Pitino? How about St. John's we're going to play?
There is going to be
And I'm like, we don't care about St. John's or Rick Pitino. That'd be great if we played them.
I disagree.
Well,
that's that's very important for the fan base.
I hear you.
There are going to be 1 billion opportunities for him to answer questions. I don't think that was
after his first loss.
Well, who cares about the first loss?
I just wanted to hear. I never have gotten to hear him actually talk basketball yet. And
to come out and bring the whiteboard out and go, now here's how we're going to play. We're going to have these three guys.
I think they should have had a 30-minute press conference first and then the pep rally the next day. That's what I think they should have done.
I thought they handled it beautifully.
Well, I mean, of course you did. I mean, there's 80,000 fans eating popcorn and Coca-Colas and
don't forget the ice
beers and ice cream and the floating parade came by and all the players were there and
Fred is upset about it.
In my opinion, it seemed like it was we were having a reenactment of 1998 or 96.
Yes, that's exactly what they were doing, and it was smart.
Okay, I don't get.
So you
it.
Didn't.
1996 is bye-bye, gone.
Okay,
I know, Fred. But here's the thing: half of the fan base was on social media going, "We hate this hire. Why would they? Why didn't they get this big time guy?" They orchestrated an event that got
all the fans behind the hire.
But
he's going to be there no matter what, so then fans can either jump off the bandwagon or stay on it.
It's not that way today. You have to do these kind of things.
That didn't happen to Louisville. They're one of the top 10 programs in the country.
Dude,
no, they're not.
They
are not.
They won 8 games in 2 freaking years. What are you talking about?
We'll talk about a fan base that needed to be brought back to life.
And they did it.
But they had a 30-minute press conference.
Well, but it wasn't exact. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, even Cal had 100 people there at his little shindig.
But it wasn't exactly Mike Wallace on stage with Pat Kelsey going, now, how do you feel about
the things
that they...
But he did answer a lot of questions.
Can I ask you a question?
People ask.
Did Pat Kelsey win a championship at U of L?
I don't know.
No, he didn't play there. This is the first coach that's played at UK and is back at UK.
It was done the correct way, in my opinion. I'm 80-20 Mark Pope, and you ain't going to change my mind.
Well, I heard two things this weekend. One thing I heard was Kelvin Sampson came out and said,
that guy has the most difficult, crazy offense
I have ever seen, and it is – I was sweating bullets the night before preparing for him.
Let me just say this, and I'm not trying to.
But he still beat him.
I'm not trying to demean quote unquote fans or anything like that, especially not anybody in this room. But the vast majority of people that watch these games have no freaking clue about what really happens in the flow of a basketball game. And so, I don't understand this. Like, okay, we either win or we lose, and we score a lot of points or we don't. Like, I don't get, did they want Pope to come out there and explain his offensive philosophy?
There are logical questions that are asked when a coach is hired.
All right. I'm going to give you the floor.
What's his recruiting tactic?
He had a radio show.
Recruiting strategy?
He had a radio show on Monday, and he answered a lot of tough questions, in my opinion.
Recruiting strategy? Okay, then maybe he did, and I just missed it.
What's your recruiting strategy?
I want to know what.
Well, I would suspect it's going to be we're going to try to get the best players we can that want to play at Kentucky.
Well, some people don't do that.
Who?
Danny Hurley doesn't have a McDonald's All-American.
Yes, he does.
Oh, he has one. That's right.
We want to get the best players
we can. Guys, you are getting the wrong idea. I'm going to be devil's advocate on Mark Pope till the day I freaking die.
Why?
So, because I am.
But,
he wasn't
but
one
why?
Of my choices. He wasn't near any of my choices, and I want him to be able to prove it to me. Do I love the guy? Yes. But I'm not going to go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs because he's UK's coach. I'm going to back him up. I'm going to watch every game. I'm going to... That's all I can do. That's what every UK fan does. They watch him and they cheer them on.
I will say this. In the middle of the season this year, all four of us at some point go, watch out for BYU. Pope's doing a great job out there.
He is. Is he ready for Kentucky? I don't know. Maybe he is.
And we got an ex-player. If anybody understands it more, I think it's him. Here's the other thing I wanted to say. His family, including his daughters, are pumped about being here. And if you move, you pick up your family and move them, there is things going on in your home that you have to take to work. He doesn't got to worry about that. So that's an added bonus in my opinion.
I think there's a lot of bonuses. Don't get me wrong.
But and his wife's hot.
I mean, you know.
Well,
yes, she is.
I
love the guy. He's smart, and I think he's going to do good things, but I just don't want him leaning. I know it was just for a day, but, you know, everyone's going to be gaga, all gaga, goo-goo over the 96 reenactment and everyone showing up and everything. It's time to get down to work. It's time to get down to business.
And I'm sure that he's doing that and probably not sitting in his office rewatching the 96 championship
game. I hope so. It was just, I don't know. I just thought he was too... buddy, goofy. I just wish he would have every once in a while, just was like, hey, okay, hold on, guys. I really want to answer this question, or I want to say this. I'm not saying he needed to answer it like George Snuffleupagus on the goddamn
Snuffleupagus,
whatever his fucking name is on whatever or freaking name is on Face the Nation. But I want him to at least say, you know what? That's a great question. And this is why. No. Everybody chill for a minute. I want to tell you all, he asked the question. I want to say it. Da, da, da. And then he could go back to going, and all this kumbaya stuff.
I
just thought it was a little too much.
I think it's very telling that, number one,
it looked like it was a circus.
There is not a coach that came out either on the record or off the record that had a single, not only a single bad thing to say about Pope, but anybody that's actually coached, every single person was like, this dude is it. He's the real deal. And I take a lot of faith in what coaches think and not necessarily what Johnny from...
But he wasn't the real deal at any hires anywhere.
What do you mean?
Dude, I mean, all these other teams hired all these people. Mark Pope was never on any of their lists. None of them.
So?
Well, he wasn't that much of a great get, or he would have been on all the lists.
That's not true at all.
I disagree with
that's
you.
That's not true at all.
I disagree. If he's a up-and-coming coach, he wouldn't have gotten drummed. He got drummed in the tournament.
Yeah, he
coaches,
Brigham Young.
I get it. And you're saying he's going to have every resource that he can have in Kentucky. Great.
If you look at the brackets, 78% of people that filled out brackets online picked Duquesne in that game.
I did.
That team was very good.
I did. I won money on them in Vegas.
I mean, I hear you. Then they need to join the Big 12. I mean, who cares? I think they should have beat. They're a better seed. They should have beat Duquesne. Kentucky should have beat.
I was going to say, we've won one
Liberty.
Game in the last 4 years.
Kentucky should have beat. I know. Well, neither is he. So we all need to win together. And I think when we win that first game together, things are going to change. When we all, and I think there's something to be said about how refreshing that it will be when Louisville wins their first game with their coach who's never won a tournament game yet. And when we win with Mark Pope, who's never won a tournament game yet. And it will be a group effort. It will be a fans. Everyone will feel a little chill on their back when everybody wins.
I agree with that.
And I can't wait for that to happen. I don't want y'all to think I'm not on board. I just, I'm just being a little devil's advocate, sort of, to where I just thought that the pep rally was after a while was a little much.
Well, I will say this: one thing that he said that I really, really liked was he's here for the players, for the fans, and for the university.
Right, and he may never go.
Not Cal. That has come out on record, recorded 100 different times, saying,
"I agree.
I don't care about the wins.
I care
about these kids and their future."
Not to mention another good thing, Mitch Barnhart, and I really was being a little devil's advocate just about the actual the pep rally thing. But as far as Mark Pope, I am on board 100%, and I agree with what y'all are saying. And I know that he does. There are some things that he hasn't done yet that he needs to do, and I'm sure he will. But I agree with you that it's very refreshing that he's going to do everything in his power and use every resource he can. I don't think he was hired just because of Reed Shepard, because I don't think Reed Shepard's coming back.
Probably not.
And another thing is Mitch Barnhart, that's his hire. So that's his guy. And that makes a big difference too, because he wasn't Cal wasn't Mitch Barnhart's guy. It was the guy that passed away that was
Barnhart's
his liaison.
Barnhart's been there for 24 years.
It was Barnhart's liaison. I read an article about this. Who told him about Cal? Not Tommy Cron. Who passed away that was on the radio? Travis.
The guy that played basketball.
Mike Pratt was the guy that got Cal on board for UK and talked Barnhart into it. Because Barnhart hired Billy Clyde, and then he went with what Mike Pratt told him that he should do. And it worked out. Hey, it worked out for a while, but the welcomes were worn out. And I tell you what, to be honest with you, the refreshing coaches, one's 7 foot, one's 5 foot two,
that was
shaking
Kelsey.
Hands in court.
Did you see Kelsey on the football field last week?
Oh, yeah.
Full pads, helmet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Catching punts
and
catching them.
You know what? And I'll be honest with you. The one thing about it, if we would have gotten Drew or whatever, the one thing I was going to be a little jealous about was, man, I wish we could have gotten an energetic guy kind of like Kelsey, because he really did sell me. And guess what?
We did.
We got an energetic guy and a Kentucky guy. And so, hey. And I'm going to end this where I am pumped for Pope. I'm pumped for Pope.
And a lot of people.
My new T-shirt.
A lot of people are going to listen to this. I'm going to say it again. I think it's a big thing that the family is on board. The last daughter walked in the night that they were going to talk about it, and she's like, "When we going?"
Right.
Like, they're excited.
Right.
So that's a big weight off of his shoulders. Right. And to all the teams that we play at home next year, I don't know if y'all heard this story. Mark's wife bakes homemade cookies for every visiting team and takes it to their locker room the night before,
right,
which is cool.
Nice.
Hope they're chocolate chip.
So, UK Bill, don't get me wrong. I was just talking about the circus-type pep rally. Other than that, I am 120% on board with everything, and I love it. I think it's good. The state is going to be so refreshing with these two guys in charge.
Hey.
I can't wait. I really can't wait for the season to start.
I'm a glass half full guy, a blessings in disguise guy, and we got a Pope. So I think we'll be all right.
A Pope and a Kels.
Well, that was good. That was a great discussion.
Want to talk Germantown baseball?
No. 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 We'll save that for the very end.
No, the very end's going to be about young children and athletics.
Because
adults ruining it for them.
Because then, after it goes on for an hour,
I can hit the stop button.
I did want to mention briefly before we get into our next topic, the WNBA draft was earlier this week. Caitlin Clark, as everyone knew, was going to be drafted number one by the Indiana Fever. Super cool for the city of Indianapolis. Super cool for the league. personally, I'm very excited about that. And even the Pacers, the Fever have won a WNBA championship several years ago. And admittedly, I was not a follower really of the team, although I followed their. I loved their old coach Lynn Dunn, who's now, I think, either the GM or director of basketball operations. But it's cool to see the entire city of Indianapolis and really the country get excited about Caitlin Clark coming to the WNBA. And I can't wait for the season to start.
They got the Fever had a pick in the second round, too. And I forget the girl's name, but Ohio State girl? I'll look it up.
Maybe.
I was impressed.
But they got, I mean,
oh,
they
yeah,
have.
She's pretty.
They have Aaliyah Boston. They've had the number one pick 2 years in a row. And they also have Grace Berger, who played at Indiana. So I think they're set up to be, and I don't know if you guys saw, the Fever have 36 games this coming season on national television, which is like 20 more than any team has ever had, which is, I thought was kind of crazy to think about. I mean, that's the Caitlin Clark effect. Like every game almost is either going to be, I say national television, it's either going to be on national television or streamed, I think,
yes,
on
right.
Amazon, I think, has like 8 games or something like that.
Celeste Taylor from Ohio State.
Okay, yeah, right.
She's
right.
Wasn't she second team All-American?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're set up to be very good for a very long time, and I'm very much looking forward to it. So, congratulations to Caitlin Clark, the Fever, and the WNBA in general. I think they've got a lot of positive momentum coming into this particular season, and I'm definitely going to go to a game or two.
What about next year's Vegas trip? See the Fever play the Vegas girls out in Vegas.
I would love to do that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I saw that on the secondary market, the top 20 most expensive get-in-the-gate tickets are all on the road when the Fever come to play these different teams.
They were saying something the other day about the Fever home games right now. If you want a ticket, it's going to cost you about $250.
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you used to be able to go up there and get them for $5.
And then Caitlin's getting, what, $76,000 this first year?
Well.
For her salary.
Yeah, for her salary. She's going to make a bajillion dollars otherwise.
Her Prada paid her.
It's like Bob Knight, when he was coaching at Indiana, never took a salary higher than the highest paid professor at Indiana. But every year he was the highest paid public employee in Indiana because he would get all this other money.
You know how the draft is in every sport? And she wore Prada apparently the other night. First time a person had ever done that. They also paid her $150,000 to do that.
Well, there you go. She was on Saturday Night Live
on Saturday
Night.
Night. Yeah.
So, I mean, so speaking of WNBA, let's get into the NBA.
Just finished a crazy game, the Sixers and Heat.
How did that? They knocked it out of bounds, but.
Well, there was like two technicals right there at the
end.
It was
okay.
A 5-point game. It ended in 1 point at 1 point.
The Sixers won, I assume.
Yes.
Okay. We had actually, I think, kind of broached this subject a little bit, either on the last podcast or maybe the one before this, where I was adamant. I said, something is going to happen very soon where sports gambling becomes a major issue in a major American sport. And the news broke today that a player has been suspended, or not suspended, banned lifetime. From the NBA for life for not only gambling on games, but for actively being a participant, i.e. taking himself out of games, claiming illness or injury or whatever. And, you know, Adams, the NBA quickly came out. Okay, he's banned for life. But in the same, you know, he's like, the NBA is committed to, you know, the integrity of the game is the most important thing, blah, 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 blah. But yet, every single NBA team has an official sports book. They have, you know, a lot of them have advertisements in their buildings for FanDuel or Caesars or whoever they have agreements with. How do you kind of jibe the two things there of, yes, we take the integrity of the game very seriously, but we also understand that sports books are going to pour hundreds of millions of dollars into our league for the foreseeable future. I mean, that's a weird, it's a weird dichotomy to have there, right? I don't know. I mean,
I think you're going to
you
see
have
more
thoughts
of it.
About this.
I think we've, and I don't know if it's on air or off air text or conversations we've had, but we've talked about NIL, and there's going to be kids in college that shave points.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
Yeah.
And it's NIL, I say, plus. We got ESPN. We got ESPN plus. It's these guys on the side going, hey, you want to make an extra $100,000? You know, that happened back a lot. There was a movie about it back in the – I think the movie came out in the early 90s, but it was about stuff that went on at St. John's or Rutgers in the 60s and 70s. That stuff's going to happen again, and we're going to hear more and more about it.
Well, the most famous one was CCNY, where they were shaving points. You know, it happened in the NFL back in the 60s. There were guys that got, I believe Paul Hornung was one of them, that got suspended from football for several years.
This doesn't have to do with point sharing, but it has to do with betting. Are they doing away with, and this kind of flows into it, it's an argument that you could kind of talk about both, but are they going to get rid of like prop betting? Because some of these players, I mean, that's what they're doing.
There are a lot of states that have already
getting rid of prop betting
for college games.
Right.
Now, this particular instance in the NBA
was the same
kind of deal.
Right.
A guy bet, I think it was like $80,000.
Yeah.
On this Porter kid to not get his points, rebounds, and assists.
And he had a lingering injury, maybe, where he knew he wasn't going to play the whole game, right?
No, he went in and played.
So he went in.
He played for 3 minutes
okay.
And then claimed
and
that
then
he was
claimed
sick.
He was sick, yeah.
And
But I really think DraftKings and all that are going to have to do, they're going to eventually do away with prop bets.
I think the states are going to, and especially with this, and, I mean, look, we're all learning this stuff in real time. Sports betting has only been widely legal. Hell, it just became legal in Kentucky a year ago. So they're still trying to figure this stuff out as it happens. But there are going to definitely need to be some guardrails put in place. And as you mentioned, Fred, with NIL, I mean, there's some guardrails that need to be put in place there too, for sure. Because, and I'm not going to try to get off on a tangent here, but some of these numbers that you're hearing about these college basketball players that have entered the transfer portal, the Ballo kid that just committed to Indiana from Arizona.
He committed to Indiana?
Yeah.
Yep.
You sons of bitches.
I heard you're going to get the kid from Louisville, too.
Who?
Hatfield or whatever?
No. He went somewhere
else.
He
was in the mix, though.
But the number that I heard for Ballo, the starting number was $1.2 million.
Wow,
$1.2 million.
I still have eligibility left.
And I mean, look, the kid's a good player. I mean, I get it; he's a good player. But $1.2 million?
Yeah, I hear you, dude. That's crazy.
That seems insane to me.
It is insane.
And I don't know if that's true or not. I should definitely say off the top. But that I've heard that number from a few different people, that that's what they were looking for.
Back to the movie you were talking about, it was City Dump, the story of the CCNY, 1951. It came out in 1998.
Yep.
The other one, do you all remember the movie Blue Chips?
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Oh, come on.
You got some Indiana guys in there.
Dude, I was at the world premiere of Blue Chips. Are you kidding me?
What a great movie.
I was at the world premiere.
Who was the white guy that played for Indiana?
Matt Nover. And he plays Ricky Rowe.
Yeah. And
Ricky Rowe.
His parents got a new tractor. And
yeah.
Penny like Hardaway it. Got a new car. And Shaq got a new Benz. And his mama got a house.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to see that again.
You know what that was before that? Johnny B. Good. Texas and football.
But almost what was happening in the movie Blue Chips was almost, I hate to say it this way. It was almost more reputable to do things that way back then.
I mean, I won't name names, but there's buddies of mine that played at UK, and they're like, dude, we got handshakes from Sam Bowie after every
game.
Well,
yeah. I mean, yes. And there's a very famous story of Kemp Benson getting out of his car on his recruiting trip to Kentucky. He wrote about it in his book, and he said, I walked out of the car. He was like, I was a kid from Newcastle. I never had much money. He said, guy shook my hand. I looked in there. He was, I forget how much money it was, but he was like, it was the most money I ever saw in my life in my hand. I had just got there. He said, I didn't know what to do, so I just stuck it in my pocket. And my dad said, what'd that guy do? He goes, he just gave me this. And he goes, well, we'll take that, but we're not going here.
you can't say Kemp and UK basketball in the same sentence. We'll probably get in trouble for that.
I've Kent Benson, by the way, all not right. Kemp. Kent Benson. But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's going to get crazier. I just hope that they can figure out excuse me. I hope that they can figure out a way to get this in line before something really, really, really bad happens.
Well, something that came up in the press conference, not to go back on it too much, Jerry, that he did, Mark Pope did address, they asked him about, is there going to be somebody hired to handle this stuff? And he goes, yes, that title may fall under something else, but yes, they will specifically be hired to handle the
you
NIL.
Have to have somebody like that
and
now.
a lot of teams have had that.
You have to.
And UK was late to the game in getting that,
which is honestly inexcusable with the way things are going now. Like, I think you almost have to put that guy at the front of the list of people that are on your staff, because otherwise it's just a complete free-for-all.
It's like the president, you know, he goes out to give a speech. He's like, hey, can I really say this? I'm like, he's got to ask somebody. The head coach is like, can we do this? Is that okay?
Right. Yeah. So. So that's
crazy.
That's a tough deal with the NBA. But to get back to the games on the court, the playoffs are starting. And the play-in games are literally going on as we speak right now. last night, Golden State got beat. Possibly the end of the Golden State.
Are they out?
Yeah.
So sorry, Draymond.
Possibly the end of Golden State,
Yeah, Klay Thompson scored zero, had like a couple rebounds. It was his worst game possibly ever, and he did not look happy. He will not be back. He may retire. Who knows?
The Lakers are through.
The Lakers are playing great. They're through. We got the Bulls up next. Freddie's Bulls are playing.
76ers, as we just mentioned, are through now.
They knocked out Miami. Miami's still in it, though, aren't they?
Nope.
I think
they're out. 8-7 played for the 7th spot, and 9-10 played for the 8th spot.
So Miami's not. They're out.
76ers play the Knicks in the second round.
Jimmy Butler did not look happy when he walked off that court then. I thought Miami still – I thought that there was – you had
– No, see, if so, you see right there, the 10's playing the 9 for the 8 okay. spot, which I don't understand. Let the 10 play this – and the 7 played the 8 for the 7 spot, so
the
Miami's
Sixers,
out.
The Sixers are playing the Knicks.
Yes.
Okay.
Second round.
So, let's see who – so, we've got the East, we've got the West. In my opinion, the best team in the East is the Boston Celtics.
Well, I don't think there's any question about
and
that.
You all agree, I think, except for
Jody.
Hold
on.
Like
No. This conversation was before the injury.
Right.
They were playing better than the Celtics. Had that injury not happened, yes, I would pull for the Bucks. But now it's the Celtics.
Okay.
Did you hear that, Ike?
And he's not totally hurt. He's going to be back, the freak. He's just
I don't think the Bucks get out of the first round.
I don't either.
How about that?
I think the Bucks lose to one of my teams.
He's not going to be back this round.
I know. That's why I think that they're possibly going to.
Who?
He won't.
The freak.
The freak. He's not supposed to play this round. They said he's. Like 10
oh,
to
yeah, he's still
20, 2.5 to 3 weeks out.
Oh, I heard today that he was just questionable for game one.
Huh.
I thought he was going to be 50-50 for the series, but I don't know. We need to check on that.
I think he's definitely out. I think he's out for game one.
Okay.
I think after that, and maybe they're playing their cards close to the vest. They don't want to. Release that.
I mean, they're playing. Travis, tell Jody who they're playing.
They're playing the Pacers.
The Pacers, and I think they could lose. I have a nice future bet.
Even when the Freak was playing, the Pacers are 3-1 against them this year. I get it. They're different teams now, but the Pacers did knock them out of the whatever that tournament was, or
yes.
the in-season tournament. The Bucks fans will never admit this, but they have a nice little rivalry going on right now where they're, remember that whole thing
with the
taking the ball,
oh yeah,
taking the game
oh,
ball,
yeah.
And then all on social media, the Bucks fans were like, you're not even relevant. We don't even pay attention to you. And then the Pacer fans were coming back going, well, you ought to pay attention to us because we're like 6-2 against you in the last 8.
Didn't Giannis run into the locker room and grab or try to get into the Pacers?
There was some all kind of weird stuff that went on, but that's going to be a very intriguing first round matchup for sure.
Well, look back.
I have terrible allergies going on right now, by the way.
Just a few years ago, the Heat, they were the 8th seed and played in the finals against the Lakers.
That's right.
They lost, but anybody can win it.
Well, and let's get to the best team in the West, in my opinion, is the Denver Nuggets.
Well, yeah.
It is not the Timberwolves.
Which, by the way,
what are you wearing, Jerry or Fred?
I am wearing my Timberwolf Kevin Garnett jersey, blue with evergreen trees along the trim, which I love this jersey.
And Colin,
I love this style jersey here.
Colin texted me today and did he did give me his picks. He says he thinks that the Lakers and the Pacers are both going to win game one of their playoff series. And then he has the Celtics and the T-Wolves in the finals, with the Celtics winning, which wouldn't shock me.
In the Western, what's
in the
have?
NBA Finals, oh, he has the Celtics Finals. And the T-Wolves.
Wow, the T-Wolves?
He does.
Really?
He does.
Really? Okay.
They got the cat.
And by the way, shout out to my Kings that won yesterday, last night.
That's right.
Another great thing.
Thought you were a Bulls fan.
I am, but I'm my. It's a personal thing there for my fantasy. I had Fox and Sabonis, so I love those guys. I pull for them. You know, one's a UK guy. I love pulling for the Kings. I think the Kings play hard. I'm kind of a Kings closet fan, if you will.
They got two UK players on that team?
Yeah. Monk is on there, I think. And Monk there? Yeah.
Don't they have
He's
somebody
hurt
else?
Right now, though. Huh?
Don't they have another UK player on there?
Not that I know of.
Fox?
Yeah, oh, that's what I said, Fox, yeah.
No, you said Monk. Monk, yeah.
No,
Monk
before,
comes off the bench.
Before Monk, I said Fox. Fox and Sabonis, yes. They were on my fantasy team. Love them both. They both are playing great ball. They play hard. They never seem to get hurt. Don't want to black cat them.
That's too late for that now.
Oh, jeez.
I think I got that message the day
Fox
after.
Just, he don't get hurt very much. And
Giannis got injured. They were like, oh.
Yeah, you black-catted him, right?
Jody
black-catted him. Because he almost blew his Achilles out. You just didn't.
Do our listeners know what that means? Have we explained that?
Black cat. Tell them, Jody.
Say something positive about somebody. And
yeah, when we made some of our picks and we were really 100% on them in the tournament and so forth, they would lose. And that means we black-catted them.
I had parlays of Vegas. I'm like, this is easy money.
Travis, who else you like? I think the Mavericks are going to make a little run in the West,
well,
actually.
I think the Sixers-Knicks series is going to be
interesting. Very interesting. Now that Embiid's back and he's starting to get there. There's my boy Kobe from North Carolina. Sat the bench half the season for the Bulls. And they never would play him. For what reason, I have no idea. Ask Billy Donovan. I'm sure he's asking the same thing. But Zach LaVine got hurt, who is only a scorer. He does nothing else. And I'm glad he's sitting the bench, because now you can tell that the Bulls are in the playoff, are trying to make the playoffs. Big Vu, you've got DeMar DeRozan. And I love me some Kobe time from North Carolina. He's going to be a scorer and a player. And he should have been playing last year and this year. Anyways, I'm going on a tangent.
And, of course, I mean, anytime that LeBron
Kobe
is in,
White.
That's in the – anytime LeBron is in the playoffs, they have a fighting chance.
And they do have a fighting chance.
And,
they really do.
They're playing the Nuggets, and nobody expects anything of them. But it would not surprise me in the least to see that series go 6 or 7 games.
Oh, it could. And let me tell you something. I'm telling y'all right now, the Celtics are winning the world championship. I just think it is their year. It's their time. They can't keep Tatum and Brown together forever. They've got to do it soon.
Weren't they in the finals last year?
Yeah. Or,
last 2 years, right?
No. Was it two? Was it?
They're in the finals 2 years ago.
Finals 2 years ago. That's right. Yeah. But I just think it's their year. They've got all the pieces to the puzzle. Brad Stevens is ready. The whole team's ready. Do you see anyone in the East that could make some noise besides, like, Philly or the Knicks? Anyone else out there?
I mean, to me, not
like
coming.
Cleveland, maybe? No. I think they're kind of on a spiral, not to mention Spider is kind of gimpy and has been injured. I do think they have good players in Cleveland.
I think the Sixers.
But they're kind of on a downward.
I think the Sixers have a chance to make some noise. Honestly, I think if the Pacers get healthy, they certainly have a chance to beat the Bucks.
Right.
And, I mean, we'll see what would happen after that. But I think it's, to me, it's kind of a foregone conclusion to me that the Celtics are the best team in basketball.
Right.
And they're going to win it.
I want to give a shout-out to Fred real quick. You know, the last presidents of NBA teams you hear about was Pat Riley.
Right.
Jerry West.
Yeah.
And you're congratulating Brad Stevens. So that's a pretty big.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big company. Because you didn't say the head coach.
No, no. He's put that team together. Ainge put it together, and then Brad Stevens has really done a great job in keeping them all happy.
This is Brad Stevens.
Oh,
Ainge
right.
ain't been
no, I
there
said,
for...
No, I said Ainge kind of set them up years, a few years, several years ago.
Well, he did a great job.
And I think Brad Stevens learned a lot from Danny Ainge.
He did a great job of, like, whatever you want to say, like, redoing the culture
right.
there. Of,
no,
of like,
and he did. And Brad Stevens is that guy.
But
man.
This is Brad Stevens'
this
team.
This is his team and will be his championship amongst all the players that deserve it. Tatum, Brown, all those guys. Is Al Horford. I think he's still – doesn't he still play? No. I kept thinking old Al still played for them, but I think he moved on.
No.
I always get confused that they kept.
No, this is
Al.
His last year.
Yeah, he's still there.
Yeah,
he starts.
I would love to see
he's
Al get a win.
He
I
starts.
Would love to
yeah.
see. Okay, I'd love to see Big yep. Al get a win.
He's still there.
He was on the 2007 Florida National Championship.
I believe that to be correct.
2004 and 2005, or yeah,
whatever years it was.
6 and 7, I think.
Yeah,
were
six and seven.
So,
maybe.
I don't want to get too deep into the
NBA
playoffs yet because they're not really going to start in earnest until next week. We hope to have a friend of the show, Eric Eichenberger, Ike, on the show to really break down. The NBA or the NBA
we
playoffs.
We gotta mention one more team.
Okay, please.
Clippers.
Yeah.
What do you think the Clippers? They kind of falling down, haven't they?
No, I don't.
I mean, when you got Paul George, James Harden, and Kawhi Leonard.
I don't care.
No.
No.
Okay, because they were hot for a while.
I don't care.
And,
I think I,
they're
I,
not. They're not. They. Can't
they got a bunch of good
Jokic.
Players. They got a bunch
okay.
of good players.
Right. Well, they were hot for a while, but I guess they've kind of cooled.
They have
off.
A bunch of good players.
They also all got right. what's his face.
But I just don't think
OKC.
That. I just don't think that they're a
Westbrook.
Yeah.
I just don't. Yeah, they have a bunch of good players.
Right.
They don't mesh.
They have a bunch of good players. Yeah. I think Paul George is by far the best player on that team.
I mean, it's a 4-5 matchup in the first round, so anybody can win that. I mean, I'm not saying
right.
they can't win the first round, but I don't see them going any further
right.
than that.
I gotcha.
that's just a little preview of the NBA playoffs. Fred, I did want to have you talk about the Derby preps are over.
Encino won his second prep in a row. From leading from first to last. I hope some people took it. That's a horse I was going to take. I won $140 on him. So Encino is now moved into the Derby, Brad Cox horse. And he is going to be a horse to take a look at. One of my buddies... that's his Derby horse and has been before he won this weekend in the Lexington. But I was going to go ahead and just give you my top 10. That way everybody knows what horses made. Now, some
yes.
horses don't have all the points yet, and they can get into the Derby by horses defecting out, horses getting injured. Believe me, it's going to happen.
Sure, it almost always happens.
And I'm talking, unfortunately, it's some of the best horses that defect out.
Right.
Which is a total bummer. And then a horse like Country House gets in and wins. Or a horse like, you know, a horse comes in and gets second or third or whatever. It never fails, folks. But I'm going to give you... I don't have my readers, but I'm giving you my top. I'm going to give you my top 15. Oh, thank you, sir. Okay, we're going to start with, by far, the horse that looked the best last. He is a... I don't think the jockey ever sat down on him his last race. Fierceness, Todd Pletcher, is by far the number one horse after the works he's had and the final race that he dominated on. Who's going to catch him? I don't know. But let's go to the closers here. Number two, Sierra Leone, has proved that he is the ultimate closer. His jockey has a way of bum rushing you once he passes by you. Very physical horse, and he comes from way back. So I'm not high on closers in the Derby, but I'm going to have to take a long look at this because round number three is the next closer, and we're going to call him on my list is Catching Freedom. He has ran with Sierra Leone. He's been cut off by Sierra Leone. Inquiry should have been called. He has been beaten by Sierra Leone, but he has beaten other great horses as well. One at Churchill as well. Catching Freedom in Sierra Leone, number two and three on my board, and they are coming from the back. Closers. Number four is a big horse from overseas. The best overseas horse that's ever been in the Derby, in my opinion. Sorry, Mendelssohn. But Forever Young is that horse. And he has won the Saudi Derby, the UAE Derby. He's got a great trainer over there, Yakasaki. And Forever Young is a big horse. He's mature. He's going to get a lot. He's going to get bet down in this race, and he could win. He is. It's just going to be interesting to see how he goes along with some of these front runners and stalkers. Number five is going to be, where's my number five? Stronghold. Stronghold has gotten hot at the end. He won the Santa Anita. He won the Jeff Ruby Stakes before that, if I'm not mistaken. And Stronghold has kind of been my little horse that I've won money on lately. So he's got a place in my heart like Catching Freedom does. But he is a stalker and will be there. He is the number five. Number six, a horse that I have higher on my board than most, who I still think is the biggest horse. Equal him to an authentic front running, and that is Track Phantom. I think that he has not had to run hard in his last couple because he already had points, and he's ran against great competition, and I just think that he is one of them horses that's going to be up there, and he could run his best race yet there. Also, a note here, I don't have any Baffert horses in any of these because they're not in the Derby. So that's number six. Number seven, Resilience, a horse that's just coming out of nowhere lately and has won its last Derby prep and looked good doing it and beat some good horses. Resilience is a stalker and a horse to keep an eye on. I got to do some real homework on him because he's kind of popped up there very quickly. Number eight, Dornick, Danny Gargan's horse, is he's kind of went, I have an arrow pointing down for him. He did not have a good last race. We'll move on from him. Number eight, a horse that ran way back and won his Derby prep, a good one. I'm trying to think which one it was. I don't have all my notes written down here, but Domestic Product is a stalker, and he has just not been heard of lately. He hasn't ran in a lot of these later ones, so everyone's kind of forgotten about him, even though he's beaten some good competition and won his last race. He is trending up, folks, at number eight. Number nine, Encino. There you go. Polly Shore. Encino Man. No, seriously. Encino Man won the biked out of the bluegrass, just won this past week, and he is trending up big time. Number 10, Just a Touch. Another horse that's been second twice to some quality horses. And we're going to have to keep an eye on that front runner. Let's go to 11.
I thought we were doing top 10.
Oh, okay.
You have confused hell out of so many people.
Oh, well,
that
there's top 10. All right. And then I'm just going to say 11 through 16, Honor Marie. I'm going to go
Honor Mary
or Marie Endlessly. Deterministic has fallen way down the board. Just Steal, Catalytic, and Mystic Dan. That's what we're going to end with right there, those horses, and I don't think they're really going to matter.
I don't think I could bet on Catalytic at Churchill.
Yeah, it's really...
Your converter's probably gone.
Yeah, I am going to tell you that Deterministic is probably not going to be in the Derby per his trainer. I'm not sure what he's going to do, but he has not looked good lately. Timberlake is out of the Derby, and also some of the best horses here, Nisos, Muth, Imagination, those are all Baffert horses, and they will not be running in the Kentucky Derby, so there you have it. Done. Oh, you need your readers. Someone will go, he didn't mention No More Time. No More Time.
Is out?
That's 15.
Oh, well, and 15. We do have a lot more time to talk about nice. The Derby as it gets closer and closer.
What are we, 17 days?
Tuna's horse Uncle Heavy is out. He ain't gonna make it.
Oh, it's kind of like his World Cup soccer team.
It's gonna be interesting to see, like, if a horse comes in late when someone bails out that's like a front-running rabbit that's going to screw it up for everybody. That happens. Yep. I hate when that happens.
Sure it does.
But anyways, I won the Derby. I won $1,000 on the Derby last year. Travis won. I had Practical Move. I was all over him. He scratched on Oaks Day, and I looked at my book and moved right down to who? Maj.
Yep.
And those things happen.
You bet it twice on accident.
What was the horse that when I won on Authentic, the horse that I loved that was his.
Oh, yeah.
He was his stablemate.
Right.
And he got clipped his heels the paddock.
That's right.
And they scratched him, and I didn't know what to do, and I'd made all my bets, and so I went down.
One and 1A.
And just put 100 on Authentic to win.
On Mage last year, though, didn't you bet that twice on accident?
Yeah.
I bet it twice. Once on accident. One of the bets I made was an accident. But I already had the big bet in. So I bet it twice is basically what I did.
And obviously.
And Travis had a crazy bet on it, too.
I did. And we are going to ramp up as the Derby gets closer and closer. We will be breaking it down in much greater detail.
We'll even do some Derby stories.
But yes, but that should get you where you need to be to start handicapping this thing. I want to, we're getting here to the end of the show tonight, so I want to go ahead and throw it around the room for final thoughts. Jody, Mr. Electricity, what do you got?
Pope family, welcome. After the press conference, the pep rally, if you will, glad to have you here. You're welcome as always. A friend of the show, was talking to her late last night. Her dog got out, yellow lab, was gone for like 4 or 5 hours, came back, laid in the yard, wouldn't come in, dirty, in the mud. Dallas is home, so glad you're having a better day.
There you go.
And Tuna, you lost your seat, bud. You can sit on the other side of the room.
Freddie.
Tuna, I hope you're enjoying your Hungry Jack TV dinner, sitting at your seat, drinking a Mountain Dew with Thousand Island on your salad.
What?
But I hope you're enjoying that meal right now. However, number one, next week we're going to do the soccer. We're getting into the football, the Champions League. I want everyone to not feel like we had all these soccer fans were like, they don't even talk soccer.
Well, and
we're getting ready. I just did a bracket for it. And I know it's already breaking down, and I wanted to do that bracket, but they've already played like yesterday and today, and I'm not even sure who won yet. I've DVR'd some games, and we need
we will talk
moving
about that
forward,
next week. We'll talk
we
about that
are
next
going
week.
To do, and we're going to fill it out and do a bracket challenge on them. It'll be easy. And for all you parents out there and so forth in elementary schools, I heard some troubling news today that I'm sure a lot of your schools do it, whether it's a private Catholic school or elementary. For years, school has had field day. Okay, field day is a day that all the kids go out, they have fun, they go outside, they run relay races, they have the wheelbarrow race, they have the three-legged race. You find your partner, you talk about it all week, how you're going to do it, what are you going to enter, which race you going to enter, the 100-meter dash, are you fast, can you run, the relay race, the 400 relay race. There's usually some great parents volunteering. Hey, newsflash, my son's school's doing away with that. They're going to just do tug-of-war and bombardment and silly little party games. Hey, this has been going on for years, folks. I want to keep it going. Running races, track and field. This is what kids need. Good mental exercises. Life isn't about dodgeball in the schoolyard or kickball. Let's get these field day games going again. And believe me, whatever I can do, I will be trying to keep this going. More on that to come.
That's right. It's not about three-legged races and wheelbarrow races.
No.
By God, it's about... What is it about?
The Chariots of Fire.
There you go.
Carl Lewis, Edwin Moses, pass the baton.
Nehemiah.
Yes. Who's the fastest man in the world right now?
Not Usain Bolt.
Usain Bolt, not Ben Johnson.
Guys.
Ben cheated.
This was a fun episode tonight. Tune-up. We hope that you're doing well this week, and we can't wait for you to be back, but you probably are going to have to arm wrestle Mr. Electricity for
He's
your
He's on 27
seat.
Twisted tees right now.
Jackie Joyner-Kersee.
yeah,
he is. He's on Mountain Dew High.
I want to thank everybody for listening. Want to remind everybody to check us out on social media. For Mr. Electricity, Whiteboard Jody, the fabulous one, Freddie Benders. This is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody.